I'd like to welcome to Planet Waves FM, making his first and long-awaited appearance, Michael Luton, the distinguished American astrologer. Michael, thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you for inviting me. I only waited 25 years for you to invite me.
Sorry,
now
I had a long...
We've been trying to get together. We've been trying to get together for so long. It's wonderful. Thank you.
Yes, my pleasure. So one thing that stands out to me about your career, besides the fact that you probably have twice as many astrology books in your apartment than I have in mine, is that you are a horoscope writer. You are known, you do a lot of kinds of astrology, but you are known as a horoscope writer and someone who has devoted yourself to mastering that art.
Well, I don't know. I just began when I just discovered what the solar chart was all about, and that I used to not want to read charts for anybody who didn't have the exact time. And then I discovered the solar chart, and you can tell so many, many things about someone just from knowing their birthday and their birth year.
Yep. Yep. And horoscope columns don't even use that. They're just, you're reading mutual aspects right on a blank wheel, basically.
And a lot you can tell about people, especially when the planets are outer planets. They move slowly. They affect great many numbers of people.
Yes.
And you can't not read a chart. You can't do a lot of predictions and prognostication if you don't have more information, but you can do a lot.
Well, there are some who can do, seems to be, almost anything. So the horoscope columns are special to me, partly because it was the first thing I ever did as an astrologer. But before that, it was the first thing that got my attention about astrology. And I knew astrologers well, too. I lived with one. I was my first editor at the Echo Sentinel newspaper, where I was a reporter for this gritty Republican newspaper. Was an astrologer, and you once said that I fell through the roof of astrology when I described it. I got a job at the Echo Sentinel, and there was an astrology calendar hanging over my desk.
Of course.
No horoscope in the newspaper. I am sure that the word astrology was never mentioned in the newspaper, but there was a Llewellyn whatever calendar right over my computer. So for me, the thing about horoscopes, though, is that I knew all that, right? I knew Flo Higgins and David Crisman and all these people who professed to believe in astrology. It didn't make an impression on me till one day someone said, one of my readers from the environmental toxins era said, oh, you like tarot cards? You should really read the New York Post horoscope. The writer there is pretty good. So I started reading the New York Post horoscope, and I was blown away. I couldn't believe it was like Bob Dylan songs written just for me. I couldn't believe anyone could even do that. And so after a year, I couldn't stand it anymore. I'm like, how the hell is he doing this? So I bought an ephemeris and figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I became an astrologer. Started writing a column a year later. So what is that magic? Like, what is that... Not so much about the technique, but about the meeting place of the horoscope.
The meeting place of the horoscope is the sun, and that's the sun is the ruler of our lives. And when it's the center of every horoscope, even no matter whether you have the time or not, and if you take a look at the sun and find all of the configurations of all the planets that are lined up with the sun, you'll be able to tell something about somebody that nobody else can do.
Mm-hmm.
And you just use a regular house system that we call the house system. And it's not the best thing because you want the birth time, but if you don't have it and you're really good at it, you can really tell a lot about people.
Solar houses.
Solar house.
Solar house system. Which is essentially
you put
sunrise
the sun on
chart.
The eastern horizon. You put the sunrise, because the sunrise represents the human potential of everybody who's alive. Every sentient being has a sun sign. And the sun rising in the morning predicts the potential for your whole life. It doesn't give you certain dates and everything that we can do when we're doing real horoscopes, but you can give somebody a fantastic life reading just with the solar chart, and that's how I did it. Mm-hmm. I just figured out the houses and the planets moving through the houses, and I started doing it.
Yes. A formal education is not necessary, but training and mentorship, I think, are necessary.
Well, and then I learned how to be an astrologer. I think learning to be an astrologer is sometimes you have to do it in the field. And when I did it, there were not a lot of teachers around. And but what you hope to achieve is not only proficiency in reading that, but to go deeper and deeper and deeper into the study of the effect of the stars on human beings. And you go to deeper you can. And then at some point, I realized that I didn't have enough knowledge just through this chart. It was too mechanical. It was too distant. It was just you and the planets outside. So I went back to shrink school. I went to school to learn the psychology behind it and the astropsychology behind it. Mm-hmm. And then it added to my business and it added to my work. And I just keep getting more involved in it and hopefully keep getting better at it.
Are you a psychologist proper or you just have a degree?
I have a certificate from a fantastic school, and it was called Communicative Psychoanalytic Psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. But don't let that scare you. It was a guy who hated Freud. He was a Freudian psychologist who left Freud, and I don't want to go into that right now, but that completed my education and made me a much more rounded practitioner.
Yep. Well, the rebels from Freud seem to be the best of psychologists and psychologists.
Yes.
They Wilhelm Reich, Fritz Perls.
Yeah, they once invited me to speak at their group, and that had never happened before. So I went there, and I said everything that I thought about to connect astrology with psychology, and they enjoyed my presentation, and then I was a member of that group.
Rob Hahn once said to me that all modern astrology is psychological astrology.
Well, that's one of the things that happened in the 20th century, was that it really, the study of astrology was added to by the introduction of the 20th century and the 19th century psychologists. That's not the case anymore. Now there's much more interest in the ancients and prediction. But prediction was not the primary thing for a 20th century astrologist.
Yeah.
It was equally, why is this true? Why is this true? Mm-hmm. It's not always just your mother. Why was that your mother?
Mm-hmm.
Most life was about separation from the mother. That's the first goodbye that you ever experience. And when you go back and you see what the birth, early planetary motion was, you can tell a lot about people's unconscious motivations.
Mm-hmm.
But that's playing really deep state astrologer. I mean, that's different. That's different from just the sun sign, which is. I still respect it. I worked for Vanity Fair for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Every month, I was in the Korean Vanity Fair, and then I had women's magazines. So I had about five or six magazines I was writing for, and Vanity Fair was as long as it was 25 years.
Yep.
And then it got to be old. I needed something more. I needed something deeper. And I found it in learning to practice my craft in a different way with one-to-one people. But I think that it was getting a little old. I think I had penned about 1 million words for them. It was something like a ridiculous amount. Mm-hmm. And I had to come up with something new every month, which I did because it's easy to do as you watch those planets and the stars moving around and around around the sun. You can go on forever, which I would have done. But, fate stepped in, and I left Vanity Fair and began work on the stuff that I'm doing now with Pluto and everything else.
Once I did I do these video readings for sun sign video readings. The sun sign form, you know, without any chart at all, without any knowledge of the client's data, I've written some years 5,000 words per sign based on just a solar chart.
Yeah, absolutely. It is the soul of our being, and it represents the spirit and the potential of what we everything we try to do and be. And if you can do that, if you don't know anything but except your sun sign, if you study about the sun sign and you try your best every day to get out of your bed and do that sun sign the best you can without any other knowledge of anything happening, you're still following your path.
Can we give an example of? Can I propose one of how I think the solar chart works and how to develop the discussion? So, because
yes,
I have a concept for I have a concept for a book that hasn't been done since Linda Goodman, which is to really talk about how the sun signs work. But let's say, for example, somebody's a Pisces. So you put Pisces in the first house, right? There's your solar chart, right? Because their sun is what I call the reference point. And that puts Sagittarius in the 10th place and Gemini in the 4th place. So to me, this says a few things. It says that Pisces are much more aspirational than you would normally, than most books will ever say. With Sag on the 10th, the Pisces has in its inherent DNA the drive to achieve.
Well, we were also taught that the 10th place is not necessarily what you do achieve, but how you want to be known. So that's a big element of it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's how you want to be referenced, you know, what they write about you. And that's one of the things about the 10th house, that it's not necessarily what you accomplish. It's what you strive to accomplish so that you'll have a it's more your reputation than anything else.
Yes, yes.
And the planets that lie within there describe your experiences as you get there. Sometimes the experiences are dangerous and you have to encounter all kinds of peril. And some things are given to you to because whatever you did in your last life in Atlantis. Mm-hmm. But whatever happens, you're aided and abetted or even put obstacles in your path based on the planets that are in these various houses.
Mm-hmm. And that includes as they transit, you know, without any natal planets.
Oh, without any birth planets, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, as the horoscope is concerned, as far as the horoscope column.
Well, how I like to explain it to people is that the chart itself, with all the planets that you're born with, represents the terrain on which you are born. It's the terrain, whether you live in the north or the south. The natal planets are the terrain. The progressed planets, which is another form of reading the chart.
Yeah,
the progressed planets represent the terrain, not only the terrain, but the vegetation that grows on that terrain.
Uh-huh.
And the transits represent the weather that affects those transits, so that not everything can grow in this every environment. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that you learn from it, is whether you're working on the right terrain, whether you're working in the right vegetation, whether you're in the right place for the right at the right time. But that's how I see the three aspects of it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So all that is what it is. I still think that the horoscope column, without any known natal or progressed planets, just using the terrain, is still a really fascinating phenomenon.
But you can't write a column for 25 years based only on the terrain.
Well,
I
no,
don't think
but then
you can, because after, I mean, you've just sort of run out of description. Without anything that affects that terrain,
vegetation. Of course, and there's
but
where you get into plant. There's where I you mean, get into you transits.
Can...
There's where you get into the Pluto going across that Sagittarius 10th for Pisces is almost a permanent feature.
But it's infinitely complex. The more that you, the more the planets that you supply for that, you get more and more information. You can do a lot with the sun sign, but you will run out of resources to add to that, and that's why that's how I did it for all those years, mm-hmm. because I worked on transits and I worked on every element that I could think of to put in the chart. I put in the chart, but mm-hmm. I also had continuity, which was important. Because I was able to say, do you remember last year when so-and-so? I was able to do that based on the transit, and my readers all remembered that, I had a lot of readers. So they remembered exactly what I was talking about. 2 years ago, you had blah, blah, blah. Saturn was in your so-and-so. But the thing about it is, Eric, that one of the things that that it makes it impossible to go deeply unless you do go deeply, and that if people will say Saturn was in your fourth house until it's going to be in there till November, and November it'll come out of your fourth house, and when it does that, all of the things that have been going on in your family that caused you obstacles will clear up. Well, November comes and everything clears up, and the person says, how did he do that? Saturn moved out of my fourth house, and he's right. What they don't tell the people is that Saturn's going to move someplace else. Huh. And there's always something, like Rosanna Dana said. There's always something. And so, therefore, you have to really learn how nothing is permanent. Everything is in a state of flux. And when you get too attached to anything, you learn that lesson bitterly. This is one of the things about astrology that is the lesson. Nothing is permanent. Everything is in a constant state of movement, and that's why you have to go with it.
So that's a life philosophy there.
By experience, you realize that that's what it is. You realize that the things that are so important to you, Mars is going to go in my fifth house. I'm going to have a love affair. Mars is going to go into my fifth house. If you don't have a fifth house in your horoscope that is favorable to that sort of social contact, Mars will come and Mars will go in a matter of 6 weeks, and you'll go through that opportunity, but it won't deepen. So your natal chart and your progress chart helps you deepen experience, but none of it is permanent, because eventually you're going to blow away like the leaves in the autumn. Eventually you're going to die. And you have to learn that you can be. This is the irony of astrology. The irony of astrology is you can't be alive. You can't consider yourself alive unless you have known the experience of love in this lifetime. I'm not saying necessarily romantic love, but you can't say that you were a living being without experiencing love of some kind in this life. On the other hand, mm-hmm. you have to also be able to say goodbye to that love, because nothing is permanent. And that's what you think. Love is wonderful. Attachment brings sorrow. And that's one of the things we learn when we're here. We're incarnated beings. We are here for just a lick of sweetness. We'll do anything to have just a little bit of happiness. And then you realize if you get too attached to that, It will disappear, because mm-hmm. none of it is permanent. But we all need the joy of being alive, and the joys of pleasure, and the joys of knowing that we've tasted love. But nothing in life is permanent. If once you have been incarnated, you're going to be disincarnated. You will be blown away like the leaves of autumn.
So here is where, for example, your columns are informed by an underlying life philosophy that has nothing to do with any special planet, but rather is a kind of ground that you're working from spiritually, and then you express that philosophy through the current drama in the planets. Am I right?
Well, yes, but I always use comedy in my work also. I always, the irony of life was always right at the forefront of my work, and still is.
Sure. Well, that's one way to handle the drama of life is to have it be a comedy as much as it is a tragedy, and it's engaging.
Exactly. So I was very serious about my work. Every month for 25 years, I was serious.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, it was always with one winking eye.
Right. Well, I can yes. To tell me about your version of the winking eye, and I'll reveal mine.
No, you go first.
For me, the winking eye is that the horoscope column is what I consider to be a spiritually relevant fiction. It's a story. I'm not really predicting. I'm not really talking about the person. I'm talking about the chart, but making it engaging as a narrative. And I know that it's a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, that gives me creative flexibility to work with it as a narrative.
Of course, based on the fundamental meanings of that planet and the planet that rules that planet in the horoscope, because every planet has a planet that rules it. So you have layer on top of layer on level on top of layer, which gives you a lot of latitude to describe and to inform, and yet there's also the irony of which you find in every horoscope. Every horoscope I ever did has a very rich, ironic twist that makes nobody is boring to me.
Yep.
Nobody is boring to me. Any one of those charts looks complicated when you look at it, but always a door opens when you study it and you realize that this person is a suffering being seeking happiness.
Yes.
And that is what drives me to keep doing it. Is that I realize that if you're on the earth, if you're incarnated, you're going to know suffering because you are going to be attached. But there are also paths to enlightenment, not only just spiritual enlightenment, but right here on earth, there's ways to find joy and the best that you can. And that's one of the things that kept me going all those years.
Mm-hmm.
Was just the fact that I could find the irony of every chart, and I could look into it, and I could see where the person's joy would come from. You can't see everything. I mean, you wish you could, but you can't. But sometimes when you strike it rich, you see a doorway, a golden doorway in that chart, and you realize, now this person needs to develop this. This is where the real happiness lies. It's not over on this other part of the chart. That's a fake. That's like the nodes, you know, the nodes of the moon. This is a fake thing that the person's chasing. And that represents childhood. It represents death anxiety. It represents all kinds of avoidance. But here's something in the chart that is representative of the person's fountain of joy. This is what needs to be worked on. This is what needs to be developed. But you also have to be subtle in your ways of talking. You can't tell people what's good for them.
Mm-hmm.
You have to let them people discover their own, because there's always a chance you could miss it. Mm-hmm. There's always a chance you could be wrong about it.
Yep.
And you always have to keep that because I have done that. I've seen in my chart, I've been waiting for this chart person to come to get their session. And I think, oh, this person's going to really be a toughy one. And that's not that at all. The person is very enlightened, very spirited. And so I'm not always right at all. And that's what I like about it, that if the person is still the mystery.
Yes.
The person is always the mystery.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is humanistic astrology, I think, which is right ahead of psychological astrology. Dane Rudyard, I went digging once with the help of Melanie Reinhardt into the roots of psychological astrology, and I found it with Rudyard. I think it's his term, actually. And he would have lunch with his client before doing the reading. He would meet up one day, have lunch, chit-chat, not talk about astrology. Then he would have the session and do the chart.
My training is the opposite. My training is to have strict boundaries, because that's the only way that I have been taught in communicative psychoanalytic psychotherapy. Only if the person is really safe will their unconscious communications be able to bubble up to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And they will never be safe if there are not very strict boundaries. They will resist those boundaries, and the framework of the session of where it takes place, what time it takes place, how long the session is. Those are vital elements in my work, mm-hmm. because that's the only way that the patient or client or person can ever eventually begin to feel safe. There has to be complete
Sanctity, you know, of the that, you know, sanctuary, sanctity the say, of the therapy, yeah. space. Yeah. Yes.
And so I would never have dinner with them before or after. But right.
But again, this is Rudyard in a different era, right? This is Rudyard, a contemporary master of his art, developing a method that worked for him. And just because he had lunch doesn't mean he had bad boundaries.
Well, because he had lunch, he had no boundaries. And I wouldn't do that. But that's just, again, that's a good thing you bring it up. Because stylistically, you can't criticize the next astrologer who's doing it a different way. Because I have my way, and makes it very imperative that there's a lot of privacy that privacy is sanctified, and so I would never see anybody from the same family. I don't think that's a good idea. So I have all these rules that go along with it, basic from my training as a shrink. Mm-hmm. But as an astrologer, I have much greater, you know, leeway to talk. And also, a lot of my clients know astrology already. Mm-hmm. So they also want to talk some astrology, because I do all the work beforehand. And then when the person comes, I don't even talk astrology unless they're astrology minded, because I have found in my practice that sometimes when they don't know it, they don't really process it, because they don't know the language, and yeah. they'll leave and they'll say, he said my Capricorn was in my, I had three Capricorns in my, they don't really get it. Yeah. And then they don't need it, because when you go to the doctor, you have an ache in your elbow, you say, you don't want the doctor to say the knee bone's connected to the thigh bone.
I do. No, I want to read the whole lab report.
That's because you're an astrologer.
Yeah.
And if I have an astrologer, I don't mind talking about it. But if the person is not an astrologer, it's like talking French during the session.
Well, can I tell you how I do it?
Sure.
I'll suss out the person's interest in astrology and their fluency, first of all. But my guide rule is to use astrology only when it's the best metaphor. And I'll say, can I give you an example from your chart that's technical, not that technical, but, and then explain it because it's the best way to explain it. There may be another way to explain it.
That's excellent. That's an excellent way to do it. I'm fortunate enough that I see things like cartoons. I see things in movies. I see things, so I can give them a movie.
Right.
There's an example called, Scenes from a Marriage, in a Bergman movie. And I often use that because it was two people who were going to get separated in a very, very modern, rational way. And they'd go all about it until the very last moment when they have to sign the papers. And that's when the wrenching moment of separation occurred. It's a wonderful film and really a good. They ended up married to different people and they went on vacations together. It's a wonderful way of learning about separation by removing it from the person's exact situation and bringing up another situation and how they held it. So
what's
I think
the film?
In terms of Scenes from a Marriage by Bergman.
Yeah. Directed.
And also, there's a movie, Shenandoah, with Jimmy Stewart, and it takes place just before the Revolution, and the sheriff comes to take his horses. He's raising five boys alone. His wife is going, a bunch of kids, I think three, five boys, and his wife has died, and they want his horses for the Revolution, and he refuses to give that. He says, I'm not going to get involved in this. It's not my war. And so he decides not to give them the horses. But something happens, and he's drawn into the war anyway. So it's the irony of resistance, and so that's a wonderful movie to learn the lesson.
Mm-hmm. So
that's how I do it.
Yeah, I mean, what I hear you implying is that astrology is part of the storytelling tradition, and that's one of the reasons why it works as a modality for people.
Yeah, this is a good way of saying it.
It can, you know, connects to them.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it.
Well, isn't it? I mean, it's, it all starts with a bunch of people in the dark, like in the year like 5000 BC, and they got nothing to do. It's nighttime. And there's somebody who can look up at the sky and say, I see a hunter. And everyone's like, really? It's like, yeah, I see a hunter, and there's a bull, and he's got a spear. Well, that's engaging. And then
yes,
that morphs with the Sumerian, when do we plant the crops version of astrology.
And so, you get that because one of the people sitting in that circle says, you know, every time that little orb is in the sky like that, I feel like having spaghetti. So the thing is, it's learning that what means the repetition of movement, and when events take place every time a planet is in that place, it's called planetary return. And that's how I base my Pluto transit on this stuff. And that's how I base a lot of my stuff on planetary returns. That's how I do a lot of future predicting. And that's how I can bring up things from the past. The person doesn't even, how did you remember that? Because I remembered. I remember when Mars went over your third house, you were in an accident. And I remember that you telling me that. And Mars is in that place right now. That doesn't mean you're going to have another accident, but you're going to certainly remember that accident because that's what the planets do. They cause a groove in the heavens.
Yep.
And that groove is a memory of events. And every time a planet goes over that, that irritates that place a little bit, and you remember it. And that works also for joyous moments. Every time you have Jupiter move over a certain place, you remember when you were encouraged by your family or friends to do this sport, mm-hmm. and that you were encouraged. And so you say, every time Jupiter's up there, I feel encouraged. And that's one of the other ways that delineation became possible and useful. People watching returns and what happened again at that point.
Mm-hmm. I find eclipses, even in writing the horoscope column, sometimes I'm writing about very old eclipses where there's a transit to the point of the eclipse. And it gives me good material to write about.
That's a return. That's exactly
it.
Return.
Is a kind of a return.
Sure, it is. We just had Saturn Pluto return in 2020. The last time that happened was 1982. Well, that was AIDS. So everybody remembered that, and we just had a memory of that in mm-hmm. more ways than one.
And the Reagan Revolution was that era.
Pardon me.
The Reagan Revolution. That's 82.
No, the Reagan Revolution was earlier, I think it was. '82 was another Saturn-Pluto conjunction.
Well, definitely, in Libra.
It was at 29 Libra.
And what's interesting is go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and the one before that was World War II.
Yes, I think was it in Taurus?
It was in Leo.
Had to be Leo.
It was Leo, yeah.
Of course. Because if it was Taurus, it would be like another faraway century. Like, for example, Saturn-Pluto conjunctions, they will have many things in common, but they'll have a different manifestation. So, for example, the Saturn-Pluto opposition was 9/11. The conjunction was COVID.
But the conjunction is the same kind of vibration dressed up in a different mask,
yep.
to coin a phrase. It's dressed up in a different Halloween costume.
Mm-hmm.
But what my job is to rip off the costume and see what's going on in the essence of that vibration, because it always seems different, but it's the same, and it's how you help people to get over repetition compulsion. Because you realize this is not a different boyfriend. This is the same boyfriend. It's just this one's blonde. The other one was dark. So it's recognizing the essence of aspects, because the Pluto or any planet can change its costume, but you have to be able to smell the same thing. And that's what one of the things about getting a horoscope read is about. It's learning what repetition is about and how to make more conscious what unconscious behavior you had before.
Yes, you spin the chart up into awareness so people can actually sense what's going on from the viewpoint of astrology. People can get by That's without right. it, but it's a helpful tool when it's used
it
well.
It is.
When it's used well.
When it's used, yeah, exactly. I agree.
The kids now, the younger ones, they've really kind of gone down the rabbit hole of this ancient stuff, which somewhat eclipsed the new planet discoveries. I've been amazed how disinterested the younger astrologers, they're not that young anymore, but the younger astrologers were in the new planet discoveries. We all through the 90s, we were in this incredible era.
I agree. And I still am. And I'm sure you are too. I still am, but I recognize it. But you have to realize that every generation of astrologers has a different focus. And as much as I think some of the ancient stuff is wonderful, I learned a lot of it. Some of it is ancient, wonderful. You can't pretend that Freud and Jung and modern psychologists
did not
make their contribution.
Yeah, they didn't happen. Right.
So that but the people coming up now are trying to find new avenues of study, and I think it's wonderful. I don't follow exactly everything they do because I'm already deeply ensconced in what I'm doing. But I think that the thing we need to say is that we have to recognize that our psychological attitude is not as important now to them as discovering the ancients. And I think that's wonderful.
Well,
but you can't do everything in every generation. You can't belong to every generation.
No, but I believe in when I try to train an astrologer, or when I do, I try to make sure they have a good survey and are at least fluent in the major movements, in the basics of classical. You got to have the basics down.
I think that every astrologer should study all of the things, horary, even horse racing astrology. I mean, there's always, there's every kind. I think that you should do a survey, and that, you know, the Faculty of Astrological Studies in England, I think that they are a fantastic, we have a lot of groups here. We have NCGR, National Council of Geocosmic Research. We've got ESAR, the International Study of Astrological Research. We have great, very, very serious groups that have that are now teaching astrology and doing a wonderful job. But I also like Faculty of Astrological Studies in England because I think they have the most rigorous schedule. And I always urge everybody to, when you're starting astrology, learn it all. Survey every aspect. Find out which one you are going to be mostly attracted to. But the Faculty of Astrological Studies, I find, is the most rigorous and the most complete of doing a deep and serious study of all the all the aspects of this discipline, and then to get certified. That's very rigorous. I think that you should try everything that's interesting to you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But don't, you know, eventually if you settle in astrology, you're going to be able to understand it in various approaches. You can't do everything, because if you try to do everything, you're going to have, as Mark Edmund Jones used to say, it's a proliferation to infinity. If you try every system on everything you do it, and if you go to an astrologer, why do people go from astrologer to astrologer to astrologer to astrologer? They say they just want to check on their transits or their. That's not the real reason.
No, not at all.
People go to a million astrologers because the thing has not happened. They haven't connected with somebody with whom they can seriously communicate. Once you find that astrologer, you don't need anybody else.
Yep. Yeah, and they may be looking at their spiritual reasons reasons for that. My approach is to have practiced every method well enough to have it in the toolbox, so that, for example, I don't do solar arc directions very often.
Nor do I.
But I've done them enough times that if I know I need that tool, I can work it. I might use it once a year.
I agree. I don't do the solar return for the same reason. People can say, will you do my solar return? Is that what you're talking about, the solar arc?
No, solar arc is this form of progression where everything moves one degree a year.
Right. So you cannot do everything for a client. You have to fix on something that vibrates well to the client and to yourself. Otherwise, you're going to give one. I used to do it. I used to read those 7-hour readings.
Oh, no. No, no.
And the woman would say, my kids got out of school at 3 o'clock. And I'd say, just a minute now. We're only at your sixth house.
Right. Yeah. I was saying something a little bit different, which is to not use the tools all the time, but to be ready when that's needed. I don't read solar return charts either. But if someone calls me up and it's like, let me check in that chart and see what's there,
right.
I will do
right.
it. It's not a habit,
right,
but I've read enough of them, and I have a theory that I can handle it.
Yeah, you know, Joan Negus, who was a wonderful astrologer from Princeton, she was wonderful. She used to do solar returns, but she always said, never use the solar return without putting it on top of the natal and progress chart.
Of course.
But most people just do the solar return. Where's my solar return? Oh, my son is in the fifth house. I'm going to fall in love. The thing is that Joan, and I never forgot Joan's words, because she was an expert in the solar return, and she said, don't use it alone without the progress and natal charts. And I found that to be so true. I still don't do it all the time because there are other aspects I'm looking at. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for planetary returns. I'm looking for, I'm looking for different things. And I think one of the aspects of our work that is so amazing is that there are many approaches.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's got anybody's right answer. You have an approach, and the approach is, mine is largely psychological, but I deviate from that when astrology demands it also.
Yeah, and psychological is nicely tempered with mundane, meaning with worldly physical references, and thinking of the houses not just as mental states, but also as physical spaces.
There's one movie that I've never forgotten. It's called Resurrection. I think it's the most important movie I've ever seen in terms of doing this kind of work. And I always recommend it to people. It's an incredible film about adversity and a miracle and coming to terms with your real path in life. And it's a fantastic film, and I think I've recommended it. And I ran into the star, and I can't remember her name. What was the person? She was the star what the hell was that thing? Name it. I forget the name of that. Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. Mm-hmm. But the movie she won the Oscar for. But I don't know. Anyway, I always recommend her and that film because it's my go-to film about having adversity, having tragedy, being the tragedy reversed by what appears to be a miracle, and then finding out what the purpose of that miracle was.
Mm-hmm.
That if I can in a nutshell say what I look for, that's what I look for.
Well, that's a truly spiritual approach, I think.
That's my approach, whatever the heck it is. It's
Mm-hmm. Now, you somewhat famously wrote an article in 2006, long ahead of the U.S. Pluto return. Pluto was still in Sagittarius. I read a couple of paragraphs from that article? Because
yeah,
I think you pretty much led the way on the discussion of the Pluto return, kind of obviously here. And in that article written for Vanity Fair, you wrote, Capricorn can be pictured as the mustache-twirling landlord in a black cloak pointing outside toward the blizzard while a poor pregnant wretch begs for mercy. By the way, this is storytelling tradition. Capricorn forces one to grow up, face life, recognize it's a tough world. It lends you a dime and asks for a dollar in return. It can be a sign of an inspired leader or controlling, dominating fascist. No one take this personally, please. It can support your existence or threaten it completely. Either way, the presence of Capricorn indicates big business. And what is America about if not that, said Teddy Roosevelt, right? Capricorn represents supremacy and power. And if Capricorn is not the most humanitarian sign of the zodiac, it always means stability. Capricorn supports organized society, not rabble-rousing anarchy. It's often perceived as uptight and reactionary, mainly because its function is to uphold existing law. It's not progressive or forward-thinking. End of quote. In comes Pluto.
I wrote that?
Yeah, unless I've got the wrong Michael Luton and the wrong Vanity Fair. Which,
gee, that sounds interesting. I don't remember doing that.
You did write that.
Wow.
According to the internet.
Yeah. God, that was good.
So then you comment on how in the 1760s, with Pluto in early Capricorn, pamphlets begin to circulate in the colonies exploring new ideologies of belief systems concerning individual liberty and personal freedom. Harmless enough, just philosophers spouting rehashed versions of ancient Greek and Roman notions. But the crown over in England looked on such doings as seditious. Mother England, once the great protector, was beginning to be the great drag. She wanted payback for all the protection she'd provided. That is when the colonists, starting to exhibit collective traits of a Cancerian nation, came to resent their mother's hold on them. She was getting a little too bossy and greedy.
Wow. That was good, too.
Here we are now with Pluto back in Capricorn. Hell, we're in the last gasp. You wrote this before the baby breathed its first, and now we're at the last full year of Pluto in Capricorn. The Pluto return was exact. Contact was exact 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
and it's
27 degrees.
And I'll publish this whole article so people can read all you said about basically a time of complete upheaval.
Thank you. Thank you. If people don't come after me, and drive me into the woods with their torches burning.
But you've been proven out. I mean, really, who really saw, okay, a pandemic is one thing, and I think we have similar views about this, but who foresaw the shutdown of the entire economy? Huh?
I know. It was good. It was good. I mean, I was inspired, and I will tell you privately how I came to write that, but I won't tell it to the public. But let's just say I was in the middle of finishing my life's work on the moon's nodes that I've been trying to publish for 25 years. I just had 5 more months to finish the book and deliver it. And it was in the summer of 2006 that I had an experience, a very odd experience. And I was told by somebody that I was asked by somebody if I was working on something called Capricorn. And I was beginning to toy with the idea of writing about it. And the person said, "You should really do this. You should really do this. It's important."
You mean write this article?
And to finish with this thing. And the person thought it was Neptune in Capricorn. I said, "No, it's Pluto." And then I went back to New York. I was somewhere. I had gone up in upstate to speak. And then I came back to New York and I started writing it. And my editor at Vanity Fair liked it. But they didn't want to publish it. When I finally finished it, they told me they handed it in, they bought it, and then the night before they were supposed to go to press, they called me that there was no room for it that month. And then so I was very disappointed, but I accepted it. I said, fine, it was just a piece. And then I got immediately contacted by my friend who said, call them back and tell them to take out your column this month so they have to publish it. Somebody probably didn't want you publishing that. I said, why? It's just a piece of, it's just a thing on Capricorn. So I called them, and they did that. They took my column out, and they put that in. The rest was history.
That's where the Vanity Fair column went and never resumed in print after that time?
A few months more it did, but that was it. But they didn't renew my contract.
Right, okay.
And I never realized there was a connection, of course, till now.
Well, a lot of us were wondering where that, the column called Planetarium, one of the best horoscopes in history.
Thank you. That's what happened. Somebody wanted me out of there.
Right. Well, and American editors don't really understand the beauty of the horoscope, and I think some of them are jealous of its power to hold readership.
Well, the editor-in-chief called me when it came out. He said, I hope you're wrong, because he had other political ideas that he wanted, but I didn't think it any, but he didn't have the power to kick me out. And as I said, it was one of the things about Pluto. Your listeners should know this, and everybody know this. When you have a Pluto transit, whatever you were doing, you're not doing anymore. It's always about the birth of a new experience. There are three aspects of Pluto. There's the devastation that comes, the emptiness that follows, and the fertility that springs up eventually.
Yep.
But there's you have to go through the death experience, and then you have an empty moment when there's nothing happening, and after that, there's something beautiful that springs up in its place.
Yes, and
you know there's Circe. Circe is an island that sprang up out of a volcano somewhere near the Iceland. I forget where it is now, and it caused such a devastating blackness that came out from the ocean. I always see this with the Pluto transits. And then it was just nothing but a black, cold, stone island. There was nothing grew on it. Suddenly, spores flew over it and began to drop flowers growing there. And the birds began coming there. And now it's a beautiful bird sanctuary with beautiful wildflowers on there. I don't think human beings are allowed on there. I think it's still a sanctuary. But to me, that's the most perfect analogy and metaphor for Pluto transits. First there's devastation, then there's blackness, and then there is fertility.
So Circe, that's an asteroid named after it.
Yeah, it does. It's Surtsey.
I'm thinking Circe.
Oh, no. This is Surtsey. And this is what we're going through. We're in a dark time now. We're having a Pluto transit. It's no joke. But you always have to never be afraid of a Pluto transit. You always have to focus on the fertility that will come from it. But you have to surrender to the darkness before that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And never be afraid of it.
Yes. And it's helpful to study past Pluto transits. If you're curious about them, you can look them up. And read about them.
Realize the one in 1982 was very difficult for me and many, many people. But when I realized what came of it, the fertility and the creativity that rose from that, I have to hope that this is the same time now, that there is threat, there is danger, there is horrendous, horrendous fear. But fear is the thing that you must never allow into a Pluto transit. You have to be able to spit in its eye and never think that the fertility does not follow it. It does.
Well,
but
boy,
you cannot be afraid of it.
Society sure got dragged into being afraid of a Pluto transit.
Yes, somebody did that. Somebody did that, and somebody did it on purpose. But there's also the fact that you can go through a Pluto transit. And the reason that we're all alive now, that we're even listening to this discussion, because there's a purpose that we lived. There's a purpose that we lived through this to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have to apply ourselves to now.
Yes. Well, that purpose is a gift.
Correct.
To have that frame of mind. And to work with purpose, you suddenly have. I mean, when COVID happened, I would have been whatever the COVID thing was. I knew I had the job of setting out to investigate it, so I just was not hapless victim of the whole thing. I assembled a baseball team on March 3rd, 2020, and went and got busy. And that purpose carried me through the whole thing.
Of course.
And so anyone can do this.
And anyone has a purpose. You can't think, gee, what can I do? It's not a question of doing something for the war effort. It's doing something for the effort of humanity. And it's even if your book club around your once a month you meet and discuss books or anything, you just find your purpose now. Go to your sun sign. Your sun by house will never defeat your purpose. Find the house your sun is in and link link the sign with the house it's in, and that will never disappoint you if you stick with that combination. The sun by house. Find it and follow it.
Good suggestion. Can we wrap up with some thoughts about Pluto in Aquarius?
No.
Are you not liking this one?
No, it's not that. But when you have Aquarius, there's never a prediction. There's always the last minute change. So if you're having an Aquarius aspect, don't try to guess it, because whatever you guess will be wrong.
Okay.
I have certain ideas about it, but you know what? I live for today, and I'm not going to make a prediction about that. I've made some statements about it, but we're not through with this yet. We have to deal with this one, especially now the last 3 degrees of Capricorn.
The anaerobic degrees.
The anaerobic degrees. It's going to seem like it's not moving, but it is.
Right.
It's just like a very, very old person takes one step. It seems like it's not moving, just like a glacier, but it is.
Well, you know you're getting old as an astrologer when Pluto seems to go quickly through a sign. But that's not going to be the case with Aquarius. It's 20 years, and it will be even slower going through Pisces and slower going through all the way out to Taurus, I believe, is the...
A funny thing that happened, I was watching public TV one night, and they were showing Ken Kesey's magic bus from the 60s. Mm-hmm. You know, so, and comes out of this, it was on the History Channel, and all of a sudden, stepping out of this bus, the most beautiful woman I'd seen in a long time, it was Erin Sullivan, one of our astrology friends, but she was 20. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, my God, she was gorgeous. And then I thought, when you start seeing your friends on the History Channel, you're in trouble.
The History. Yep. You've been around for a while. Yeah. That's funny. So did she ride the bus in that era?
No, she was one of the people. That was her moment. She was, I think they went around the whole country in that bus.
Erin Sullivan was a merry prankster?
Yeah, she was.
Oh,
of course
for fuck's
she was.
Sake. Now I've got to write to her. The last time I wrote to her was when she was the editor of this series, it was kind of a modern classic series that included Chiron and the Healing Journey, the Arcana Dictionary, still the best dictionary.
Yeah.
She was editor of that thing.
Write to Erin. Write to Erin. She'll love to hear from you.
Good. Well, I'll invite her on the program. And I just wrote her a gushing letter thanking her for this series of books. It included Jeffrey Cornelius, one of the greatest astrology books ever written, The Moment of Astrology.
One of the greatest astrologers ever born.
Yeah, he's great. I've recorded a whole seminar with him. I wonder where those recordings went. They were on my website for years. I hope that they survived this.
Did you ask Jeffrey and Maggie where they were, where they are?
I'm not in contact with them digitally. I recorded this for Nightlight Astrology maybe like in 2016 or 17.
Oh, no.
I co-sponsored Jeffrey Cornelius in New York. Co-sponsored that.
Oh, right. I remember that. I remember him being here. Yes. When I went there, I stayed with them. It was a wonderful time.
No, they're lovely. He's a Brit. I saw him at a conference once, and I basically walked up to him and threw my arms around him. He didn't understand that. As a Brit, he gave me the funniest look. We became friends, but I just had to thank him. Like, what a fucking great book that it kind of blows away all these dusty theories using a classical method.
Yeah, he's wonderful. He's wonderful.
Yes.
But anyhow, it's been wonderful talking to you. Thank you so much. I've always wanted to come on this show.
Oh, good.
I don't know why I didn't ask you.
Yeah, we're in touch periodically, but this has been great fun, and we can choose a topic and develop it. I mean, I'd love to unpack your theory of the nodes, a misunderstood theory and misunderstood principle of astrology. A lot of bad stuff got, kind of translated over.
I love to do that.
And it's hard for people. They have a hard time with the nodes. You really have to practice, and you have to respect eclipses, I think, to understand the nodes.
I got into the nodes because when I was first doing astrology, setting it up without any computer or anything, I remember sitting in my apartment on Third Avenue, and I put the north node in and then the south node in, and then I sat there staring at the paper, staring at the paper and saying, nobody knows this. Nobody knows this. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows this about me. Nobody knows this about me. And then I was a node person forever.
This is your chart. You were looking at your nodes, and you had that personal revelation.
I said, nobody knows this. This couldn't be somebody in India who made up astrology. Right. Well, this is real.
This is real. Yes, I call it a different kind of thing. It doesn't even exist.
I love
to talk
about it.
A different kind of thing. Well, no one even knows your sun sign, so that's there you go. So no one certainly knows your year of birth or your lunar node. So you managed to keep that secret for.
Not at all. I just didn't want to bore everybody.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, definitely don't spoil the surprise.
We'll do it. We'll definitely get on it next time.
Wonderful. Michael, thank you so much. And for your, we had a conversation the other day when I was sitting at the Broadway Lights Diner that I was so grateful I had a conversation with an astrologer who wasn't busy drinking the Jim Jones Kool-Aid from the barrel. You are not taking any shit on this issue, and I am grateful that you've been standing up to the astrology community on this problem that it has.
Well, I have. That's not to talk about this time, but what I would like to do is to bring the astrology community back together again.
Well, if any way I can help with that, I don't seem to be a rallying point for those people. But let me know if I can help.
Well, let's see. Let's talk about it.
Good.
Okay, so thank you again, and I'd love to come on the show again, and give me a call sometime.
You're most welcome, Michael.
Minutes.
All right.
All right, thanks a million.
Yes.
It was really great. Talk soon.
Yes, bless. Bye for now.
Bye.